This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, Man of Two Worlds, by Frank Herbert and Brian Herbert. Copyright 1986 by Frank Herbert and Brian Herbert. Narrated by Roy Avers. This book contains 429 pages on 10 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player in fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the beginning of the book. Annotation. Farcical science fiction novel revolves around an alien race, the Dreen, who long ago used their mental powers to create Earth and human beings. As Earth becomes more violent and dangerous to its pacifist creators, the Dreen contemplate erasing it. A mischievous adolescent Dreen complicates matters by assuming human form. Some strong language. 1986. From the book jacket. The first time pairing of the incredible talents of two Herberts, father and son, delivers a brilliant blend of exciting science fiction adventure and slightly outrageous comedy. Double the enjoyment. Frank Herbert, one of the world's most popular and successful science fiction authors, is best known for the Dune books. The 6 volumes that have appeared to date in the fabulous Future World saga are celebrated as serious, highly philosophical books of tremendous scope. Mr. Herbert's son, Brian, is a widely acclaimed author in his own right, whose works are full of wacky, offbeat humor. In Man of Two Worlds, their first collaboration, the reader is treated to a glimpse of the lighter side of Frank Herbert and the more serious side of Brian Herbert. Here, these two writers combine their prolific talents to create a charming science fiction adventure story replete with the fascinating elements we expect from the creator of Dune, and peppered liberally with enough stabs of wit and improbable situations to mark it clearly as the send-up it is meant to be. Send-up or not, Man of Two Worlds is a story with a compelling premise. Suppose all of Earth, all of the universe, were the creation of the fertile imagination of an alien world. Suppose, too, that we had reached the point of being able to destroy that world, without realizing it was our creator, without knowing that its destruction would virtually erase our existence. And suppose that the future of both races lay in the hands of a confused man who is half greedy, aggressive human, and half precocious, naive teenage alien. A masterful concept. Masterfully and wittily presented and resolved, makes for the Herbert's newest bestseller. About the authors. Frank Herbert is the world-renowned author of Dune and over 24 other books of science fiction. Brian Herbert, author of The Garbage Chronicles, Sydney's Comet, and most recently Sudana Sudana, lives in the state of Washington. Other books by Frank Herbert. The Dragon in the Sea, reissued as Under Pressure. Destination Void. The Eyes of Heisenberg. The Green Brain. The Heaven Makers. The Santa Roga Barrier. Dune Messiah. Whipping Star. The Worlds of Frank Herbert. The God Makers. The Jesus Incident with Bill Ransom. Soul Catcher. Hellstrom's Hive. Project 40. The Book of Frank Herbert. Threshold. The Blue Angels. The Best of Frank Herbert. Children of Dune. The Dosadai Experiment. God Emperor of Dune. The White Plague. The Lazarus Effect with Bill Ransom. Heretics of Dune. Chapter House, Dune. Edited by Frank Herbert. New World or No World. Other books by Brian Herbert. Incredible Insurance Claims. Classic Comebacks. Dedication. This book is dedicated with gratitude to Hal Cook and Jean Ringenberg. If every dream dies, the universe collapses, for all life and all matter are sustained by dream imaging. The Touchfinger Tabloids, Dream School Curriculum. Ryle felt no pain on awakening, and he did not remember the collision. His mind groped for reality. What was the odd surface under him? I am on a far Voyager deck, he thought. The surface where he lay felt slippery with viscous liquid. Something approximating gravity held him down. His dream senses suggested he was caught in an erratic spin, but it was more than that, perhaps the gravitation of a planet as well, and he could not understand why he returned to consciousness this way. His eyes swiveled inward to darkness. I am a dream. It was a clear thought, and suggested things not in immediate memory. His brain ached as badly as from a Bazille hangover. Urgency tugged at him, but he did not want to face it. Better to consider what it meant to be dream. Was it good to be dream? I can image. Despite this dream creative power, he now saw little that was graceful or pleasing in his native flesh, an observation that struck him as peculiar. But dream mind powers could create new matter, even stars with planets, and new life forms. He could shape-shift his body into that of any other creature, changing functions and appearance entirely. Why then, Ryle asked himself, did dreams look so similar? Lumpy, ovoid bodies with four concealed legs and two arms with six-fingered hands extruded only when needed. Even Habiba, supreme tax collector of Drenor and the oldest Dreen, could not explain this peculiarity. She said the reasons for Dreen shape and powers were lost in prehistory. Dreens, Habiba explained, were similar to other life forms in this limited knowledge about themselves. An intrusive buzzing and clanking sound interrupted these reflections.
Odd sounds. Patricia, at work?
What a strange name for a semi-sentient spaceship. Patricia. That had been his first reaction. It was not a name a dream spoke easily, even after creating the requisite vocal system in his malleable body.
Patricia?
He recalled his initial shock at the ship's odd behavior.
My name is Ryle.
He had said this in a patronizing tone, the one taught for use with excursion ships. The response was unexpected.
Don't take that tone with me.
He remembered sitting in the control room, shocked by the ship's commanding tone. Did it suspect he was adventuring? He thought of his intentions as adventure, not as stealing.
I was escaping Dreener's boredom.
Ryle had been extremely tired of all the talk about his gifts and potential. What did they expect from a son of Jongleur, the chief storyteller? He thought the elders would call his taking the ship a schoolboy prank if they caught him.
So I took the ship. And I am Dreen, but far away from Dreener.
He had no idea how he knew these things, nor why it was important to reflect on being Dreen.
Why don't I think of myself as graceful?
Was it that he could completely alter his appearance, but could not make piecemeal changes? A Dreen's floppy ear covers draped like small brown blankets down each side of his body. Very impractical, as was the large horn-tool nose that dominated his face from the widow's peak of pink hair atop a neckless and shoulderless body, to the concealed mouth that revealed itself only when open to receive food or make noises. He had a memory vision of fellow dreams lifting an ear flap and asking speakers to repeat themselves. Impracticality. Small mouth. Weak vocal cords. Ears blanketed. By Imaging, he could shapeshift his entire body. But tradition dictated he never do this on Dreener. Metamorphoses were reserved for Offworld. Dreener was a place of sanctuary and storytelling camaraderie. Ryle wished he were back on Dreener now to share a tale of distant travel, Idmage creations, and adventure.
That's why I defied my elders and took the ship. I was tired of the boring schoolboy life. I wanted to be the youngest junior storyteller. That's why I did it. That's why I'm here on this slippery deck. Slippery deck.
His eyes remained swiveled inward to darkness, but more details began to surface.
The ship.
Many ships sat on the mud-brown flat of Dreener, coming and going with their storyteller captains. The ships were great bulbous things, with extruded sensors like waving cilia to guide them through the spirals of creation in tangled space. Sometimes, for no observable reason, a ship would remain unchosen and dormant, awaiting just the right captain. That was the way it had been with this ship. It had been part of Ryle's environment from earliest childhood, only a few months out of Seed House. Even before being sent to the school for gifted children, he had thought of this ship as his own, creating fantasies of himself in the spirals. He had wondered often about its personality. The varied personalities of excursion ships, as taught in school, fascinated him. Ships were almost like people. But this one.
You will call me Patricia.
Ryle's proctors had told him the most enjoyable trips into the tangles of space were on ships having personalities compatible with your own. You chose your ship with great care.
Patricia?
Immediate sense impressions demanded attention.
What was this viscous fluid under him? Why the dullness in his body? Something was disturbingly wrong. Had Patricia malfunctioned? Impossible. Excursion ships were imaged to be perfect. And what was this erratic spinning motion holding him to the deck?
He tried to consider the possibility of something wrong with Patricia, and recalled instead the appearance of the ship on the Dreener flat, a golden egg with cilia sensors glistening. Each time passing the flat, he had looked to see that his ship remained unchosen by an adult.
Wait for me, beautiful ship. When I graduate, you will be mine.
Once he had seen a group of adult Dreens working on the ship, all under the direction of Mugly the Elder. They conferred, pointed, and swiveled their eyes inward to Idmage, making the ship even more perfect, no doubt. Nothing could go wrong with a perfectly Idmaged ship, could it? Early one morning, before school, he had sneaked past the sleeping monitor and boarded the ship to take away copies of its flight simulation manuals and their crimson displays. He rationalized that gifted children were expected to prepare themselves for the day they would go out as storytellers to create new worlds.
But this was secret preparation,
teaching himself to pilot an excursion ship, something far beyond the careful pacing of the adult monitored curriculum.
No one suspected he could pilot his ship, could take it without permission and vanish into the creative spirals, no matter that he was too young and had not absorbed enough cautionary instruction.
I'll be the youngest Dreen ever to create new worlds.
He saw himself in the elite class of junior storytellers, training ground for advancement to elder.
Imaging.
How attractive to contemplate the supreme Dreen ability, to make tangible the living fantasies of the mind, to create new life forms, and return to Dreener with stories of his artistic efforts. That was why he had taken Patricia. So why was he here on a deck with a slippery fluid under him? There was an odd smell, vaguely familiar.
What was it?
Patricia?
He ventured. The ship did not reply. Patricia had not opposed him when he took over the controls, although she called his pretensions
An interesting dream produced by your immaturity and boredom, but consistent with a dream's natural imagination. Did Patricia self-destruct? That was a terrifying thought, and flooded his mind with Patricia's irritating voice. You are going to a dangerous place, and the storyteller who commands me likely will die.
By Habiba's everlasting seed glands.
He suddenly remembered the awful revelations of his ship. The Earthers on patrol holds captive Dreens. I have this information to explain why I must self-destruct rather than permit Earthers to learn my secrets. This was more than the bits and pieces from adult whispers about Dreen disasters.
The creatures he made worshipped him. His creatures did not evolve and just died out. Faulty precepts.
Children heard such things and created their own myths. But his present situation was no myth to be greeted with amused tolerance by adults.
Why wasn't I told?
Patricia said children could not share real disaster tales until deemed capable of handling harsh information.
I have encountered harsh information. What happened to my perfect ship?
Once more he called out to Patricia, but still the ship did not respond.
He thought he would even welcome one of her caustic lectures, if only she would speak. He did not want to be alone.
Where am I?
Ryle swiveled his eyes outward and locked them into place. He saw shadows, then bursts of light that brought pain and forced him to blink. He squinted cautiously and saw a dented, silver-yellow bulkhead directly over him. Patricia's control room, but badly damaged. Destruction, but not total. He lay on his back, and it hurt when he extruded an arm to touch the deck. Not cold, not hot. Sticky stuff. More memories returned. He saw his ship emerge from the spirals, felt again the excitement of that moment, and then disaster. Another ship occupied the emergent space. The effect was not just a collision, but a massive attempt by two large objects to occupy the same space at the same time. His control room smashed through to the center of the other ship, dominating the impact and telling him his was the more massive object. When the first shudderings and boomings of the crash subsided, he heard hissings, clangings, and snappings, and saw emergency repair manipulators attempting to seal his area against loss of atmosphere. Fire! He remembered flames. That was what destroyed the sacred dream drive.
I am trapped here. But where is here?
He could still hear nearby sounds to suggest emergency repairs. This gave him hope. He rolled his body slightly to the right.
Pain!
He was a moment fighting off the defensive ball reaction, every dream's instinctive response to danger. Curiosity and a need to know sustained him. What were those two mounds stretched across a break in the bulkhead? He stared at them.
Badly damaged protoplasm. Bodies from the other ship.
Ragged bits of green and black fabric hid some of the shattered flesh. Ryle took an interminable time extruding legs to help him crawl toward the bodies. His efforts hinted at terrible injuries, vital organs crushed and severed. Too much damage for imaging repairs, but those bodies at the broken bulkhead offered a way to survive. Painfully, he reached the first body. He recognized the shape from storyteller accounts, an earth human. The earther was dead. Ryle moved to the second body. Blood, much blood. Some his own yellow, flowing and mingling with earther magenta. And a clear fluid spouting from a bulkhead rift. The second human still breathed. Ryle's left front leg crunched shattered eyeglasses. Agonizing cramps warped his flesh, and the defensive ball reaction tried to dominate him.
Can't let that happen.
This was no time to be immobilized and helpless. The odd smell remained, but he noted no more hiss of escaping atmosphere. What was that smell?
Memory from a fully assimilated storyteller account answered his question.
A clear fluid. Volpo.
It had been an extremely artistic dream story explaining Volpo, the highly explosive fuel used in Earther's primitive ships. The other ship in the collision was of Earther origin. One of its occupants lay dead, and another appeared to be dying. But the Volpo demanded immediate attention. It could ignite, destroying the shambles of the collision and every living thing aboard. Ryle knew he had to deal with the problem himself. Patricia was no longer functional.
I must move quickly.
He touched the surviving human's crushed head and neck.
Yes, dying.
Darts of agony shot through Ryle as he moved. It occurred to him that he too might be fatally injured. He paused to make an internal assessment.
By the blessed left arm of the Supreme Tax Collector, almost 10% of my mass is gone.
This time there was no trouble with a defensive ball reaction. His probing hands fanned into cilia, an automatic reaction against which every dream child was warned. Ryle watched the cilia slither into the dying human's face.
Merging.
He knew he must prevent this. Combining life forms created unpredictable and often dangerous results. That was one piece of harsh information taught to every child.
But without more mass, immediately I will die.
Ryle stared at an audiovisual ID tag on what remained of the mortally wounded Earther's green and black tunic. I am Lutt Hansen, Jr., it said in English. Ryle's language interpretive facility, a product of dream storytelling and education, immediately shifted to the proper linguistic form. What odd names Earthers chose. No matter the harsh warnings, survival necessity drove him. There was no time for imaging, and he needed portions of his dying body to rebuild his dream mass. Abruptly, he heard wreckage moving, metal grated against metal. Then, voices. Discarding niceties, Ryle allowed Earther flesh to flow into and combine with his own, an oddly pleasing sensation. He felt his dream resources using Earther protoplasm, letting it creep into and around his cells. Alien memories intruded.
Fascinating.
The cells carried Earther information. Too much to review at once, but similar to assimilating a dream storyteller's account. Suddenly, a voice boomed from behind Ryle.
All personnel, evacuate this ship immediately.
Ryle identified the characteristic sound clipping of an artificial amplifier. The shock of the voice and the final merging with an essential mass of Earther flesh jolted him. I must hide. Using Earther cell data, Ryle assumed the appearance and clothing of Lutt Hansen, Jr. A facsimile Earther took shape on the shattered deck, complete with clear-lensed, round-framed eyeglasses. No need to match originals. Ryle's eyes, in a new olive shade, stared out of Earther-shaped flesh. The meticulously copied face was blocky and soft, thin red-brown hair, a high forehead, and a raised blood vessel like a tiny Medusa serpent on the left temple. With desperate cunning, he appropriated a name tag from the Earther's ragged tunic and pushed discarded flesh into contact with the dead companion. The intrusive voices were much louder, metal slamming against metal. Once more, the amplified voice boomed out.
Fuel rupture! All personnel, except emergency volunteers, evacuate the damage area.
Metal crashed to the deck behind Ryle. Heavy footsteps clumped to his side. An armored hand came into view, and a brown faceplate with helmet lowered close to Ryle's face.
Hey, this one's alive. Move him.
That was the amplified voice of command. Memories and motivations from Lutt Hansen, Jr. seeped like tendrils bleeding across nerve contacts into Ryle's awareness. What an odd creature, this Earther. There were visions of a wealthy family rife with disputes and intrigues. This Lutt Jr., active in many ways, coordinating and plotting to fulfill his single driving ambition.
A dead one here!
That was the voice of the one who had come into Ryle's view.
Part of the body's melted away. Ugh.
Leave it and bring the survivor. This place could blow any second.
The amplified voice of command again. Ryle felt something being slipped under his body, a thin fabric with stiffeners. Two armored earthers lifted him and carried him through the hole torn in the bulkhead. Ryle closed his eyes and experienced a deep sense of gratitude at being rescued, even though it was by creatures produced in Dreen Idmages. Survival dominated his reactions now, and an immediate problem required attention. Lut Hansen, Jr. was becoming aware of the merging.
Who are you? How did you get into my mind?
It was a soundless voice, but it roared in Ryle's awareness.
What are you doing to me? Get out! Get out!
Ryle formed a responsive thought, trying to make it as soothing as possible, but overtones of panic were unavoidable.
I can't get out. That would kill both of us.
The human responded with more panic and tried to take control of their mutual body.
This is my body, and I want you out of it. Only a small part of this body is yours. Most of it is mine. I'm trying to save us both. You're lying.
Ryle allowed a memory vision of the moments before fleshly merging to flow into common awareness. He carefully controlled what was shared, but made it appear uncensored, astonished at his sudden ability to dissemble. The human's response was predictable.
My God, is that me? Yes, the back of my head was crushed. Nobody could have survived that. I must have been dying.
We both were dying. There was enough flesh to save us, but only in one body.
Can't we separate?
There may be a way, but it will take time and facilities you don't yet possess.
Who are you?
I am a Dreen Far Voyager.
That was a lie, but the human could not know, could not acquire any of Ryle's memories, unless Ryle chose to share them.
What's a Dreen?
I'll explain later. What was your ship doing in my emergent space? You caused the accident.
No response from the Earther. Ryle sensed advantage and pressed it.
Didn't you know an excursion ship of a Far Voyager might come out there?
The human tried to change the subject.
What's this language we're using, and how come I understand it?
This is the Dreener language, Abiba's language. When we merged, some of my language facility became available to you.
Why do you say I caused the accident?
You entered emergent space without proper warning.
I was testing my new ship.
Definitely defensive.
Well, your companion is dead. And both of our ships are total disasters. Who are these people rescuing us?
Zone Patrol. I wasn't authorized in their perimeter, and there's going to be hell to pay. It's into the clink for sure, no matter who I am.
Ryle allowed himself a secret thought.
Zone Patrol. The ones who held captive dreams.
He assumed his most persuasive personality.
I have a suggestion, Lut. May I call you Lut?
Sure, but what do I call you?
My name is Ryle. I suggest you take over control of our body and answer the Zone Patrol's question. I suggest you not tell them about me.
Silence, then.
Yeah. They'd think I was nuts unless... Say, what's our body look like?
Like you, but slightly larger than before the accident. More massive.
Ryle felt the litter being lowered to a flat surface and opened his eyes. He sensed Lut reaching for dominance in their mutual flesh. Vision blurry, vague movement of armored figures, a gray bulkhead. A faceplate came into view.
It's coming around. Should I give him a shot?
Hold it. This deck will shake if that fuel blows.
As though the words created the effect, red brightness erased the shadows. There was the thumping sound of a muffled explosion. Ryle bounced in a wash of heat.
Jeeda Rusi!
It was a voice close to his ear. The commanding voice boomed out,
"Get the fire control team in there or we'll lose the whole thing."
Ryle heard the movement of many armored humans, but could not see them because someone without armor bent close, blocking his view. Ryle saw a wide, heavy head with short hair. Hands probed and tested his new body. Female by the voice and briskly professional.
"We'll ray him, but there don't appear to be any broken bones."
"If that isn't fool luck, I never heard of it. Right next to a dead one, too."
That was a masculine voice from one side. "His lapel tag says Lutt Hansen, Jr.," the woman said. The man spoke sharply.
"Hansen? This is old L.H.'s kid. I'd better call in."
Ryle still felt the gropings of Lutt, Jr. trying to take over control of their body. Very tentative and wary, like an insect crawling along his nerves. The human lacked dream experience in their mental acceptance of storytelling. There came the sound of a click and a humming buzz. Ryle thought, "My human head moves on a supple neck." He turned his head toward the sound, but could not bring the man into view. The voice was clear, though.
"Sergeant Renner here, sir. We're at the crash site. One survivor with an identity label saying he's Lutt Hansen, Jr."
Silence. Then,
"No, sir. Fuel spilled and exploded. There are no other survivors."
Ryle focused on a circular crest adorning an arm of the woman bending over him. He filled out the shared memory with an assimilated dream storyteller account.
"Somme Patrol. This is the dangerous, all-encompassing United States Security Force, a unification of their previous military agencies."
Sergeant Renner spoke.
"There was only one other body, sir, and we couldn't get it out."
More silence, then.
"Very well, sir, we'll comply."
"I really messed up," Ryle thought.
He closed his eyes and began sorting through newly acquired memories.
"What a jumble. Important data, though. The Earther ship employed a primitive form of dream drive. We collided because the crude thing inherently honed on a signal of my incoming ship. Stupid, stupid. What happened to Patricia? Is my perfect ship destroyed forever? Why, oh, why did I take that ship?"
Lutt Jr. assumed command of their flesh, and Ryle sank into his own thoughts with a sense of relief. In school, they had said the dream partner in this amalgam might have difficulty withdrawing completely, but could be dominant by choice, taking over muscle and nerve control at any time. That was reassuring. He felt the litter being lifted and carried somewhere.
"Patricia, what is happening to you?"
It had been so easy to take the ship. Too easy. The chief monitor at the flat during Ryle's 16th year out of Seed House, an eminence named Prosic, had shown flexions and tremblings characteristic of Bazile addiction. Prosic had other defects, all of them adding up to sufficient reason for his never having risen above the position of eminence. 19th from the bottom of Habiba's 57 social varieties. He often slept during guard duty, and even when awake, accompanied the curious child into the ship for play at being a storyteller.
"If he hadn't been asleep, I never would have acquired the flight simulation manuals."
Despite the present mess, Ryle still felt proud of the way he had taken the ship. He had raised the impossible-to-image Bazile in a small experimental horticultural garden off his bedroom, hiding the prohibited plant under broad-leaved herbs. His parents, admiring the garden, never suspected. Ryle had tried the Bazile once and awakened the next morning with a severe brain ache, and little memory of its effect except for vague visions of extruding all four legs and falling asleep while counting them over and over. Periodically, Ryle presented small stems of Bazile to Prosic and one day gave the eminence a large frond of the drug to thank you for letting me play in the beautiful ship. Shortly after consuming the Bazile, Prosic's horn tool extension sank into the brown mass of his body until it lay almost buried there, and the chief monitor was a comatose lump of protoplasm. He did not stir as Ryle crept into the ship, gaze fixed on the icy yellow light shining from the control room. At last, he was in a storyteller's sanctum, and he possessed the knowledge to command an excursion ship. Around Ryle lay an ovoid enclosure, 7 times his height, and so wide even his longest extensions could not span it. He touched the first command plate, and a silver-yellow glow filled the space with an exciting, lambent radiance. Ryle stared at the controls. This was the light that signaled life-creating forces.
So I have the necessary powers.
One could never be sure until touching that plate in the command space. And this had been forbidden to a mere child. For a moment he felt fearful of the life patterns that might emerge from this place, and he dawdled while sealing the external hatches. Hesitation passed. He formed the proper pseudopod, touched the proper plates in proper sequence, and exactly as the flight simulator had predicted, he found himself and the ship in the infinite spirals of tangled space. Elation filled him.
I've done it!
Sensors displayed what lay outside, the substance of creation bathed in a light very like that within the storyteller sanctum. Out there stood the most exciting mystery of all, the raw material from which Dreen imaging produced new places and new life. He had touched the control plate and filled his mind with awareness of the spirals. Now, he could image something important. And no other Dreen could track him. Memory and the ship systems held the coordinates to guide his return. Dreener was not lost to him. He was lost to Dreener. Ryle sat in the storyteller harness, swinging at the focal center of command, and he felt very much the maker of a reality dream, that marvelous precursor to Idmage's. That was the moment the ship chose to shock him.
You will call me Patricia of the female gender.
Ryle jumped. Nothing in his education had prepared him for the candor and adjustment capabilities apparent in the voice of this artifact. He had never heard of a ship initiating conversation.
That's interesting, he managed. Why should I call you Patricia?
Patricia, she corrected him.
You will call me Patricia because it is my name and we are going to a place where that is a common appellation.
But I want to go through the spirals and
I am ordered to one destination and cannot disobey.
My name is Ryle and you
I observe that you are quite immature and will require careful supervision. It is difficult to compute why you were assigned this mission. Perhaps you are expendable. That fits the rationale of my task.
Answer my question.
Silence.
Please tell me why we have only one destination.
I am a reserved inspection ship devised to erase an image.
Ryle's body collapsed into a hard ball. His horn tool pointed at the source of the ship's voice above him on the plate wall. He knew this posture, defensive reflex. Slowly, Ryle formed his voice orifice and did the only thing left to him. He confessed.
Interesting,
Patricia said.
I am incapable of turning back from this mission, and you are the only Dreen available to make the life and death decision.
Why didn't Prosic warn me what kind of ship you are?
Prosic is only an eminence. He will, of course, be severely punished. What they will do to you must be left to conjecture.
They know where we're going, and they'll come for me, won't they?
It was more statement than question.
They will follow at a much slower pace. I was devised for the swift emergency erasure of a particular creation, should a storyteller command it.
Erasure? That word again. And Ryle thought of what it meant. A planet and its life gone forever. The tangible evidence of a storyteller's creative imaging. Everything gone, and never to recur.
Ryle's horn tool pulsed in and out with distress.
But why would... I mean, if...
Ryle could not bring himself to say it. The idea was horrible beyond anything he had ever considered.
Harsh information indeed.
The creatures of this world pose a potential threat to every imaged creation the Dreens have ever made.
That was worse.
Ryle began to see the extremists behind creation of this ship. Another aspect of the problem occurred to him.
You mean I may have to decide on... I may have to order the...
He still could not say the word.
You are Dreen, and you may have to command it. If you give the order, I must obey.
Then she gave him the full dose of harsh information.
Loneliness enfolded Ryle.
Accounts from school and storyteller assimilations had not prepared him for this. He was cut off from security, from things known and expected. He might never return to Dreener. That was where all Dreens conveyed their tales and replenished themselves.
Tapping into the past, Habiba called it.
Even if he survived the...
Damn, Habiba!
Return or die, Habiba often said.
And she had the long history of Dreen tragedies on her side.
I have 9 Dreen years at most.
Dreens who failed to return within that limit had been found dead in distant places. Folk wisdom said all Dreens must share their story experiences to survive, that Dreener was a storehouse of mystical regeneration, enabling Dreens to live forever. This was believed despite infrequent accidental deaths on Dreener and elsewhere.
Return or die.
Ryle thought he might rather die than take this kind of story home to Dreener. Who could possibly admit him into the junior storytellers after he had done what Patricia said? That might be a useless fear, too. Even though disguised as an Earther, he was now another Dreen, captive in the hands of the dreaded Zone Patrol.
There will always be newspapers, always some crusty old publisher, or a young publisher with crusty old ideas, who refuses to let go of the past. I respect the past, the smoke-filled, bustling news offices and all that, but I'm not a sentimental person. We create a better future if we stay in touch with our past, but I feel damned good about my electronic newspaper. It's my base and conduit for creativity. No details yet, but I'm about to unleash a technological breakthrough in this industry. And a related but even more astounding development will follow shortly.
Lutt Hansen, Jr., an interview in his Seattle Inquirer.
Someone's moving my arms, my legs, and my head, and controlling where I look.
These were panic thoughts in Lutt's awareness. Through the round lenses of his spectacles, he saw foggy human shapes. He heard the rattle of keys and clanking metal. There were men walking around him, at front, back, and both sides.
I stumbled, and something took over my body.
An alien force held him upright and walking steadily.
I am Ryle, son of Jongleur, the chief storyteller.
Bat was hearing voices in his head. Madness.
I was in my ship, the Vor Traveler, Lutt thought. I said something to Drick Baker, my engineering co-pilot. What did I say?
Memory provided no answer. He knew there had been a blackout. It had erased part of his mind.
He took a familiar mental course then, recalling the day before boarding the Vor Traveler.
If I exercise the brain muscles, go through everything up to the blackout, maybe I'll remember.
He had been in the family-owned Seattle Inquirer building. That much he remembered. A gray 17-story structure, the building housed the plant of an electronic newspaper.
Only a tax write-off in father's mind.
Running the family's newspaper division gave Lutt the sense that the Inquirer was much more than a fixture of antiquated technology, as his father called it. Lutt recalled arguing with old L.H. in the boardroom that morning.
but Father always had the last word.
Stop wasting time on that damn Vor spiral crap. You're making us a laughingstock, predicting astounding developments and technological breakthroughs that'll never happen. Damn it, Father. You think things will never happen just because you don't want them to happen. Son, you're sounding more and more like that crazy brother of your mother's. You keep on this way, and you'll wind up like your Uncle Dudley.
Luck stared at his father. For years, the cloud of some violent quarrel between the two men had hung over the family, and now the old man broke his own rule against mentioning Uncle Dudley.
Just how did Uncle Dudley wind up?
Lut asked, almost choking on the forbidden name.
I hope what they say is true, that he disappeared on Venus. He deserved to get his ass fried.
Seeing the signs of increasing rage in his father, Lut changed the subject, but that only led them back into the fight about the Seattle Inquirer, Vor spirals, and Lut's future in Hansen Industries. It was a continuing conflict with predictable reactions on both sides.
But L.H. doesn't know what Dritch and I have already achieved.
Dritch.
The voice in his mind said Dritch was dead. And there was that brief memory, his own body with a crushed skull.
Was that really me?
Lut cast off those thoughts.
Hallucinations. The Zone Patrol doctor gave me a shot. That's what's causing me to feel this way.
Vor spiral communications technology. That would win the argument with Father. The ability to send almost instantaneous messages across millions of kilometers of space. Transmissions faster and clearer than anything in history. Just a little more testing and development, some careful publicity, and it surely would be of interest to the military and even to other news services. But old L.H. wouldn't listen, wouldn't bend from his rigid ways.
We'll call it Vor Spiral News Service, VNS.
And the possibility, the probability, loomed before him of extremely rapid travel across interstellar space. Theory said there were Vor spirals to link any place in the universe with any other place. The speed of this travel still had to be tested, but he knew it would be very fast. Abruptly, Lut recalled what he had said to Dritch Baker in that instant before the blackout. The memory came to him so clearly and in such detail that he found himself reliving the events. He was in the Vor Traveler's cockpit. It was late afternoon, and the ship sat on the tarmac of the secret testing site just east of Seattle. A rainy day with water running down the shields. The instrument panel glowed green. There was a reassuring hum to the power systems. Dritch sat beside him, and they were struggling to get the ship into a Vor spiral that, theory said, would link them to another solar system.
Maybe this time. That's what I said.
Lut recalled the words, but nothing more. Whatever happened after those words was eaten up by a blackout. Lut's troubled memory returned to the morning at the Inquirer. It was after L.H. had slammed out of the boardroom.
I went to the 14th floor editorial conference room.
8 senior editors sat with him around the long table amidst ranks of electronic newspaper receivers. He recalled arguing loudly that the Inquirer was not resourceful enough or snappy enough in its newsplay. The ranks of receivers showed the Inquirer and rival publications to back up his argument.
We need more sensational stories, more grabbers.
He flipped the paper-thin sheets of liquid crystal screens to display pages of the rivals.
Look here,
Lut said, pointing to a headline on page 1 of the Cincinnati Crier.
Pattern to UFO sightings. Here's a story that screams to be read.
The Crier says a classified Zone Patrol report shows common factors for credible UFO sightings.
This is great stuff.
They say all UFOs have a bulbous shape and insect-like antennae all over them, plus flexible rods that sway as though blown by a wind.
Those guys on the Crier make that stuff up out of their heads.
That was city editor Anaya Nelson, caustic as usual. Lean, heavily made up around the eyes and framed by straight golden hair, Anaya's face still held a measure of her youthful beauty. But she had hard edges now. The staff said her face had only one relaxed expression, condescending.
They quote pages and paragraphs of this zone patrol report, Lutz snapped. And they're citing the First Amendment to protect their sources.
So they got some rear-rank swabby to steal a piece of ZP fantasy.
It sells papers, dammit.
You're really going to turn this operation into a moneymaker? No more write-offs for our beloved parent company, Hansen Industries?
Lutt noted the other editors trying to conceal amusement at his usual collision with Nelson, but he ignored them. Nelson smiled, knowing this irritated Lutt.
Damn her.
Lutt had criticized her non-cooperative attitude on many occasions, but to no avail. What could he do about her? Nelson was a hard-shelled news veteran in her late middle years, long rumored to be old L.H.'s mistress. Lutt did not know for sure, but the reports were that she had been an extraordinary beauty in her youth when the old man first met her. What everyone here knew for sure was that she had a pipeline to L.H. and could not be fired. Not by Junior, anyway. Lutt felt his ire rising.
I thought I made that clear.
His nostrils flared, picking up a faint odor of paint in the editorial conference room. Always painting and repainting in here. He fanned through a graphics file on his printer, found what he was seeking, and displayed it for Anaya. It showed a new masthead for the Inquirer with L.W. Hansen Proprietor. Nelson examined the artwork disdainfully. Managing editor Adrian Aide Stewart leaned close to stare over Nelson's shoulder. A paraplegic without legs, Stewart rode an electric cart that required wide aisles in the city room. Overweight and with a softly rounded face under gray hair, Stewart often surprised new acquaintances with his commanding baritone voice. Some said Stewart's voice was the main asset that had carried him to power on the Inquirer.
Very dignified, Stewart said.
It doesn't specify L.W. Hansen Sr. or Jr., Nelson said. Shouldn't that be corrected?
This is the way I want it, Lutz said.
They all know L.H. still owns this paper and my stock is a token 5 shares. She'll go straight to father with this, but I still run the operation.
Suzanne Day, who edited the style section, leaned forward with a sweet smile. Lutt had heard she practiced that smile for boss buttering. Still, she was attractive enough, a slender brunette with gentle features that were sure to coarsen because she drank too much, boasting, I can drink any newsman on this paper under the table. Why don't we offer a copying service? She asked. It could be built into each receiving frame. We could... Nelson interrupted with a calculated imitation of Lutt's voice.
But we want increased productivity, more efficiency, more circulation, more advertising revenue.
We also want excellence, Lutt said.
Day required no more encouragement. Still with that sweet smile, she said,
I've checked it out. If a subscriber wants a copy of any article, he just touches the screen over the article, tapping once for each copy desired. It's been tried before. Nelson said.
Albany Evening Bible, Stewart said. 4 years ago. There were problems.
Because they were first, Day said. There were headaches with startup costs and glitches.
Like my war traveler, Lutt thought.
Lutt's erratic memory went spiraling off into his pet project. Near instantaneous communication and travel across the solar system and interstellar space. L.H. would never provide the development money.
He wants me to run Hansen Industries.
Lutt's mother, Phoenicia, wanted the same thing, but only because she thought her son would keep up the profits. She and his younger brother, Maury, always with their hands in the till. Maury. Lutt recalled another detail of the day before the blackout.
I couldn't keep my appointment with Maury. What a shock, dear brother, to learn that someone has discovered your financial indiscretions. That'll be worth a lot of money from his accounts. But I didn't keep the appointment because of the crash and...
Yes,
there was an accident with a war traveler. This memory brought Lutt full circle and back to his immediate situation, in a corridor surrounded by zone patrol guards, his detached body walking under its own power. His vision cleared slightly, but he still had no control over where he aimed his attention. How badly was I injured? He felt too weak to take command of his own body. Lutt felt certain his eyes were not moving randomly. He was staring with too much purpose, surveying the brown and blue uniforms of his guards, examining the long gray corridor and the barred doors of the cells along both sides. He noted that a prisoner's black and green gore-cord tunic covered his body. How demeaning. Into the clank. I said that. But who did I say it to? His detached flesh did a terrifying thing then. It spoke without his volition.
I demand to know where you're taking me.
It was a boyish voice, not Lutt's gravelly tones. There were strange alien thoughts in his head, too.
How dare they treat me this way? I am Ryle, son of the chief storyteller. But I can't say anything about that. I'm supposed to be an Earther. They think I'm Lutt Hansen, Jr.
Lutt wanted to speak, but his voice would not obey. He could think, though.
Are you real? Someone else in my head and body?
I left my thoughts unshielded.
Am I going crazy?
You are not insane, Lutt. I have been listening to the sporadic activity of your simplistic mind. Your latest thoughts about your ship and the spirals confirm my earlier surmise. Your primitive ship and your lack of caution caused a disaster.
Ryle?
Ah, you remember my name.
You said I could control our body.
You were doing it too poorly.
These guards are not very intelligent, but they are trained to be suspicious. The Zone Patrol reported only two bodies at the crash, and now they know there were two people on your ship. Ergo, where is the pilot of the other ship? They will assume he was destroyed in the blast and fire, but only if we do not feed their suspicions.
Darkness enclosed Lutt, although he sensed his eyes remained open.
What's happening? He's not letting me see.
The guards and their prisoner arrived at an empty cell. One guard opened the door, and they started to thrust Ryle through the doorway. He began to struggle and shout,
I've done nothing wrong. He'll pay for this.
My Hansens think they own the universe, a guard sneered.
They sent Ryle staggering into the cell, and the door slammed. The sound of the lock clanging into place was loud in the metal-walled space.
Look, fella, the guard said. We know who you are, but you're still going to answer some questions. You'll be interrogated tomorrow, and there's nothing your old man or any other Hansen can do about that.
The guards clumped away down the corridor. There was laughter and calling from other prisoners.
You really got one of the Hansen tribe in there? What did he do? Steal a general's mistress?
Still in darkness, Lutt ventured a protesting question.
Why won't you let me see what's happening?
No need.
But I...
Be still. I have to decide what to do about this.
A metal door boomed closed down the corridor. The laughter and catcalls subsided. Ryle inspected the cell. A tiny cubicle with solid walls. Bars on the door. No internal illumination. Light came through the bars from a small fluorescent panel in the corridor ceiling. Shadows of bars on wall and floor. Round metal drain hole in the floor bubbling with foul-smelling ordure. Gray floor and walls that looked as though they had never been painted. Water stains and rough scratchings from former occupants. He read one of the wall scratchings. Welcome to Hell. A toilet fixture protruded from the back wall. A bunk bed was cantilevered from a side wall. Thin mattress, one rough blanket. There was a distinctly stale odor to the place, and the smell of disinfectant did not cover the pungency of urine and excrement. Ryle went to the bunk and stretched out on it to think.
This had become much more than an adventure. Was there anything useful in the data about Earth assimilated from Dreen storytellers? He began to doubt this. Nothing was said about Earthers experimenting with travel in the spirals. But an erasure ship had been prepared. Erasure. He found the concept easier to contemplate. This world was a peculiar creation. Caution with any Edmige interference was strongly indicated. Who knew what Earthers might learn if they saw Dreen powers at work? But they imprisoned Dreen in a dark, dank cell, and Patricia said they held other Dreens captive. However, they do not know I am a Dreen. That is a mitigating circumstance. The bed was uncomfortable. The floor did not attract him as a resting place, dirty and smelly down there. Ryle longed for the simple platform of hardened vegetation in his Dreener bedroom. Well, there was something he could do about that. He got up and removed the mattress, leaning it against the barred door and exposing the bunk, a hard metal surface of pipes protruding from the wall. It felt much better when he lay down once more. The blanket, while coarse, provided some warmth. He felt himself drifting into sleep. Yes, this had been an exhausting experience. Still in darkness, Lut came to weak awareness of the hard surface under him. He complained about the bed. Ryle paid little attention to the protests. The deeper stages of Dreen sleep were more attractive. He drifted into a combined Dreen-human dream. The Lut part of the intertwined dream focused on an ideal, to him, human female, and became, to Ryle, a nightmare. The woman had no visible face, but she possessed a voluptuous body from which radiated a golden aura that drew the dreamers to her. In the dream, Lut made love to the female in the abhorrent human way that had so shocked Ryle when he encountered it in a storyteller account on Dreener. How could a dream have idmidged such a thing? The dream, with its immediacy, was even more revolting than the story assimilation. Ryle now felt himself almost a participant. Still, as the nightmare continued, Ryle sensed something odd emanating from the dream encounter. This particular woman Lut hoped to meet someday aroused tender feelings in him, feelings almost approaching dream tenderness. Lut called her Nini, and said she was far different from the horrors of his past experiences. The nightmare continued for what seemed to Ryle an interminable time. Nini never spoke or showed her face, but Lut's dream thoughts revealed her history. Nini had lost her family in a war on a planet other than Earth. She loved Lut, but he was forced to compete for her with another man. Dreamer Lut demanded the name of the other man, shouting, "I will kill him!" The other man appeared in the nightmare then, another faceless figure in the shadowy distance.
"You love him too?" Lut shouted. "I know you do!"
Dreamer Lut chased the faceless man, but the man ran through fearful shadows and hid in impenetrable darkness. Ryle felt the torment and frustration of the nightmare as though they were his own, but could not find answers to the dream's questions. Was Nini real? Was she dead? Was she someone Lut would meet in his lifetime? In the midst of this frustration, Ryle found himself dreaming simultaneously of Dreener's School for Gifted Children. Proctor Shanless ranted at Ryle's inattention to lessons.
"The tests say you're intelligent," Shanless screamed, menacing the youth with a flexible rod. "The tests say you will be able to idmidge more than common Dreens. Why, then, can't you understand the simplest lesson?"
The dream Shanless whipped the rod against Ryle's back, demanding,
"Why? Why are you wasting my time and testing my patience? Why?"
Ryle felt the dream whipping raise welts, saw yellow blood run down his brown skin. The pattern of the welts was that of the steel bed frame in his cell and blended with the bars on the door. The nightmare came to an abrupt end, with the clanging of a metal door somewhere in the distance. Ryle awoke and, for a moment, could not remember where he was. He could still feel the stings of the whipping and the frustrations of the human nightmare. Something was approaching his face. More nightmare? No. It was an insect. A fat spider dangled from its silken thread directly above him, descending slowly. Its legs were arched gracefully, extended like the stabilizers of a flying ship. Ryle saw it was preparing to land on his forehead, unaware of the eyes observing it. Rolling from beneath the arachnid, Ryle battered it toward the wall and saw there a cockroach. It waved its antennae at him. Ryle swung his feet to the floor, looking at the earther shape he had assumed, thinking, "A cell. They've confined me in a cell. I must escape. I've come from a classroom prison to this earther cell and the prison of a merged body. What can I do?" Lut continued to dream. Ryle picked up fragments of the human's awareness, oddly parallel to Ryle's classroom dream. Lut sat at a classroom, and an earther scolded him. The instructor was Lut Sr. How tough and cold he looked. He wore strange devices over his eyes and offered money instead of grades. The dream father waved a $500,000 bill as his mouth shaped words that had no sounds. In the dream, Lut Jr. thought, "I can read your lips. I understand the language of your body." But there was no interpretation in his thoughts. Ryle turned his attention from the dream. The swatted spider had recovered. It swung from the end of the bed frame, descending to the floor. Abruptly, it occurred to Ryle that he could shapeshift into the spider form and escape this confinement. He leaned close to the insect and formed a single cilia, which he inserted into the spider as it dangled on the end of its thread. The thing was remarkably simple, and Ryle wondered why a great storyteller had bothered to create it. Giving little thought to the varieties of shape-shifting, Ryle assimilated spider essentials from its cells. Confidently, he swiveled his eyes inward and focused on the changes necessary to convert himself into an arachnid. The change was comparatively easy, but he came through it with the abrupt realization that he had done something perilously wrong. Not enough oxygen! He was dying of oxygen starvation! Too late, he remembered a dream school lesson. With simple shape-shifting, you will have approximately the same mass in the new form as in your form before the change. He was a gigantic spider. The gore-cord tunic burst across the middle from the spider's fat body. 8 wiry legs ripped their way through the fabric. Shoes and socks fell to the floor and the useless eyeglasses dropped onto them. The spider's primitive system of oxygen absorption would not support his mass. Ryle felt consciousness fading. His giant insect body plopped to the floor. The legs extended uselessly to the sides. Energy was fading fast. Thoughts of escape dissipated. He had to focus on surviving this stupid mistake.
"I may have energy for only one attempt to return to human form."
Desperately, he swiveled his eyes inward and concentrated on the Lut shape he had so carelessly abandoned.
"Is it working?"
Slowly, he realized he lay stretched out on the floor, face down with nose pressed close to the odorous drain. His chest heaved, and he realized he had returned to earther shape. The gore-cord tunic lay in a tangled mess that required quick imaging to restore before someone saw him in this disheveled state. He replaced the eyeglasses on his nose, put on shoes and socks, and presently sank back to the hard pipes of the bunk, weak from exertion. First things first. He forced himself to review the imaging and shape-shifting lessons of the Dream School. Basic imaging. A dream's personal mass, reinforced by a lifetime of experience, dominates shape-shifting. Reducing mass to the size of an insect required long training and tremendous concentration taught in a graduate course he had not yet taken. Such a shift also left a residue of protoplasm that would degenerate unless conserved in one of several dangerous ways.
"You will learn mind over fear," the proctor had told him.
"I wish I already had learned it."
Another bodily priority intruded on these reflections. Hunger gnawed at him. He had expended great stores of energy since the last time he had eaten aboard Patricia, an idmaged meal of suprinian proteins. Now his hunger would not let him think of anything except food. What to eat? His earther form and proximity to earther society reminded him of a favorite confection. It would take energy to bring in the required mass, but something bubbled out of the drain hole, and he looked down at a drowned rat. Easily available mass. Ryle's eyes turned inward to a vision of an earther delicacy common on Dreener. The rat carcass vanished. In its place there appeared on the floor a strawberry ice cream sundae in a white plastic bowl. A plastic spoon stood upright in the ice cream. Ryle did not waste time admiring the sundae. He rolled his eyes outward and sat cross-legged on the floor to eat. The spoon, he noted, bore a familiar inscription. McDonald's Restaurant. A tradition on Dreener. A simple way to think praiseworthy thoughts about the Dreen who had created the great story out of which this confection arose.
Ryle reviewed praiseworthy thoughts as he savored every melting bite of the rich, creamy sundae.
Abruptly, he felt Lutz's awareness intrude, demanding a share and control of their body.
"Ice cream?"
Lutz asked. The vocal cords produced a gravelly voice. Ryle noted this and corrected his voice memory against the next time he wanted to use their mutual speaking system.
"Why are we eating a strawberry sundae?" Lutz demanded. "I hate strawberries."
Someone in the adjoining cell said,
"Hey, this Hanson fellow thinks he's eating strawberries."
Catcalls and laughter echoed up and down the corridor.
"Why can't he think he's eating a steak dinner?"
"Nah, Cherry's Jubilee."
"He should think about Sol Amandine." "Chocolate cake!"
A commanding voice from the end of the corridor shouted,
"All right, you guys, break it up, or you won't even get your evening gruel."
Silence. Ryle experienced resistance in his arm muscles as he lifted another spoonful of ice cream to his mouth. He reverted to think sharing, though, having seen what speaking aloud produced along the corridor.
"You're not eating the sundae, I am."
"Tell that to our taste buds."
"Strawberries are one of my favorite foods, and since I can idmage anything I wish to eat, provided I have energy to bring in conversion mass, I will eat this whenever I wish. I also enjoy romungi, warsockles, and bitter peeps. You've never tasted those foods, because they come from faraway planets."
"Your strawberries make me sick."
Indeed, on examining his internal reactions, Ryle found the strawberries were producing a protein incompatibility that would require correction in the Lutz parts of their body. With a sigh, Ryle put the bowl on the floor, swiveled his eyes inward, and de-idmaged the sundae as much as possible. When he looked at the area near the drain, shards of rat flesh lay on the floor.
"No more strawberries," he thought shared. "I do want to get us started on an amenable footing."
"What did you just do, Ryle?"
"We call it grind-idmaging, or grinding. Grind means, well, your closest word would be voiding."
"A kind of erasure?"
"Don't use that word."
"Why?"
"Erasure is... it's more difficult."
"It felt like my eyes turned inward."
"I did."
"I don't like that feeling."
"You'll get used to it."
"You call it idmaging?"
"That is the name for how we create living and inanimate objects by mass transfer from a reservoir of available matter. Sometimes we use mass nearby and sometimes from far away."
"I don't believe any of this."
I see that in your thoughts.
This is Schizo. I bumped my head somewhere on my ship.
Your ship is a wreck.
No. This is me being Schizo because of an injury.
The condition of schizophrenia on planets where it can occur is a chemical imbalance. A bump on your head is not a likely causative factor.
But I'm nuts in some other way.
You are not any more insane than others of your kind?
I'm supposed to believe there are two of us in my body?
My body, not yours. It looks like yours, but you died on your ship. My body was badly injured, and I required some of your protoplasm to survive. That is how we merged. Your awareness came with your cells.
So I'm sharing this body with an alien?
From my viewpoint, you might be considered the alien. It's a matter of perspective.
If this is real, then you're the alien, buddy. We're in Earth territory of the Zone Patrol. Earth, not this... It's whatever it is where you're supposed to come from.
Dreener, the entire universe, you see, is a product of Dreen imaging. We like to think of it as a unit rather than as separated pieces alien to one another.
You think you're some kind of god? Now I know I'm nuts.
If that's what you prefer. You will come to accept this, however. You must, because we really share this body.
Some sharing. You're in control.
Then use our eyes and take a look around. We're in a zone patrol cell.
Ryle waited while Lut obeyed. Their view shifted around the cell. Barred door, walls, floor, ceiling.
Hallucination.
I think you'll accept it when they take us away for interrogation.
Sure, and I'll... Ugh! Is that pieces of a dead rat on the floor?
Left over from the mass required for the strawberry sundae.
This isn't happening. It's impossible.
You are persistent, Lut. I will say that.
If this body looks like me, then it's mine.
I merged our flesh and used your shape for security. The wreckage was crawling with Zone Patrol. You can imagine what they would have thought if they had seen me in the original.
Yeah? What do you look like?
A large Humpty Dumpty, to borrow an image from your nursery days.
So I've reverted to infancy. That's the kind of insanity of...
Please stop this foolish refusal to recognize facts.
I'll decide what facts I recognize.
You remember the crash? I can see that in your mind. It was your fault. You attempted to enter a spiral without...
Maybe that's it. I did enter a Vor spiral, and it made me crazy.
Spiral. They are creative spirals, to be precise. And since dream knowledge predates yours, kindly employ our terms.
What's the difference?
The creative spirals are sacred to us.
So my Vor Traveler got in your way.
I had the right of way, Lut. You should have seen the blue light indicating an approaching excursion ship. When you see that light, you're supposed to stay out until the way is clear.
Let's say I accept this craziness. What were you doing in the spiral?
I was looking for adventure.
Man, you sure found it. What made you think you'd find adventure on Earth?
The stories of my people told me all I need to know about Earth.
Not quite.
Perhaps. But I thought it might be interesting to see a human war. Dreams do not have wars. We are not violent.
Sounds dull.
I am forced to agree.
Would you like to beat up on somebody?
Oh, no, I couldn't. It isn't in the dream nature. I would not mind observing, however.
If you used my body to save your life, don't you feel any gratitude to me?
Gratitude is an emotion dreams do not enjoy. Besides, you are certainly dying.
And your life isn't worth being grateful?
This is a foolish argument. Dreams don't ordinarily die, except as casualties from stupid accidents. We have no diseases, and that includes the disease you call old age.
You just go around forever telling stories?
In a way, yes. We tell stories about places and life forms we have imaged.
I still say this isn't happening. I'm nuts, but it's interesting. I didn't know I could imagine such weird things.
Your imagination is but a paltry shadow compared to dream imaging. My people are wondrous storytellers.
And one of you dreams created Earth?
Oh, yes. And Earth, like all other dream images, can self-destruct, decay, or be destroyed by another dream creation. That's the way of imaging. Things we image exist only as long as the original force remains in the one who created it, or in someone who has fully assimilated the creative story.
If you all die out, then the places you created die, too.
We say all creation depends on its creators.
And you say I'm not nuts. Here I am having a religious argument with myself, and you say...
Not with yourself.
My ship crashed, and I'm dead. This is some kind of wild cosmic joke.
I see I'm going to have to prove this to you. Very well.
Ryle felt the energy of the ice cream sundae coursing through his body. He swiveled his eyes inward and imaged a redecoration of the self. For energy practicality, he drew mostly on the ordure bubbling from the central drain. This immediately improved the aroma. An enclosed shower stall went over the drain, its pipes linked to the building's plumbing. He carpeted the floor in green plush, put a cheerful shade of yellow on walls and ceiling. A full-length mirror went up beside the barred door, and he hung a few pastoral pictures.
Why don't you
grind the door out of existence? Lutt asked.
It's called grind imaging, and I must be very careful what effects I introduce into Earth culture. There is a specific injunction against what you suggest. It's incorporated in the original story.
All I felt was that funny twisting of my eyes. How do you do these things?
Imaging occurs in a private portion of my thoughts not available to you.
How about imaging a beautiful woman for me?
Really, Lutt, we must discuss the lustful nature you inherited from your father. Dreams think fornication is quite revolting. We don't touch each other.
Yeah? How do you reproduce?
Habiba gives us a child seed. We place it in a seed house. You may think of it as a small greenhouse. Then for 3 days and nights, the parents sit outside with the seed house between them. They use concentrated imaging to produce precisely the child they have decided to bring into being.
So you don't get ugly ones, or...
Dream ideals have nothing to do with appearance. Desired traits are honesty, fidelity, a peaceful nature, pleasing personality, loyalty to Habiba, our supreme tax collector, and characteristics of that sort.
Man, does that sound dull. And if a dream created Earth, he must have thought it dull, too.
It is slow, not dull. Each night, the seed house must be kept warm with a blanket cover and imaged heat produced by the parents. When a dream baby evolves from the seed and embryo, it is brought forth a new life.
The parents don't touch each other?
Nor do they speak during the entire 3 days. Their energy is conserved for the difficult imaging process.
Well, I gotta have a woman occasionally.
Perhaps we could compromise. If I forgo strawberries in any form, would you consider not engaging in...
Why don't you just find a way to separate us and go back to your damned dreamer?
I do wish I could.
What's it like, this dreamer?
There are many ancestral family homes built of natural mud brick, stones, and hardened vegetation. Each home is occupied by the family's youngest married adults and the one child they are permitted to have.
One kid per family? Is that all? But wait a minute. If you only die in accidents, the population pressures must be fierce. How do you handle that? Image new dream planets?
Ryle found this a puzzling question and reflected on it before responding.
Actually, our family homes extend far under Dreener's surface. The deeper level is occupied by family members in order of age, the eldest in the deepest level.
How deep do these homes go?
Habiba says the depths are endless.
There's got to be a limit.
I've never thought about that. Perhaps it should be a worry, but we are taught that worry is a negative thought process, and we naturally do not worry very often. Especially about unimportant things, such as how deep our homes may go. That would interfere with our requirements for positive thoughts.
Every day, in every way, things are getting better and better, eh?
Now that I think of it, Habiba says we depend on the concept of ampleness, wherein Dreener is always large enough to accommodate all dreams. Even though I am naturally rebellious and think forbidden things, I don't consider this worth my effort.
So you're a rebel too?
Yes, but I must tell you the full beauty of Dreener. Each family home has an adjacent air shaft. Dreams can control a helium gland, permitting us to air float up and down these shafts.
We could float out of here?
Unfortunately, Dreens cannot do this anywhere except on Dreener. Habiba says we have a mental and physical block that is coded into us at birth.
And everything you do is controlled by this tax collector?
We pay in stories. The surface occupants of each home are the taxpayers. They are required to tell one or more stories to a blue cap who transmits them up the hierarchy to Habiba as her tribute.
Good stories, huh?
Habiba judges that. The best story receives a maximum of 10 talents, the annual tax rate on a home tract. It is best to have backup stories available at tax time, however. Habiba rarely awards maximum talents to a story.
Humans also use stories instead of money to pay taxes.
It's not quite the same, but the storytelling aptitude must be a natural part of your genetic coding, because you are, after all, products of Dreen imaging.
New stories every time?
Oh, no. Old stories are quite important, too. They are the Dreen heritage, because if any story dies out from not being shared, the physical aspects of that story, people, planets, and other life forms, all vanish.
You know, this is weird. And it's all coming out of my mind.
Our mind.
Sure, sure.
Normally, taxpayers must tell 2 or 3 stories a year to meet the tax obligation. Taxpayers with a repertoire of superior stories, capable of paying their assessment 5 years in succession with but 1 story per year, are invited to join either the junior storytellers, for those under 500 years of age, or the senior storytellers, for those 500 years of age and older. Gifted seniors join Habiba's personal entourage as elite storytellers.
This Habiba sounds like some powerhouse.
She is the eldest of us all and teaches the most. Other elders come up from the deeper levels periodically to instruct the tax-paying surface residents in the art of storytelling. That's how we keep the old methods and sagas alive.
Anybody ever get dispossessed for non-payment of taxes?
We hear about family holdings being placed in jeopardy, but I don't believe a family has ever been expelled. Habiba can withhold child seed. Being childless places you in low esteem, a supreme punishment. End of side 1. To continue, turn the cassette over.